Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd be hit with tinea cruris if you made me itchy with the idea that you missed this week's show. Zombie Loyalists. Peter Shankman is a 5-time best-selling author, entrepreneur, and corporate keynote speaker. His book, Zombie Loyalists, focuses on customer service, creating rabid fans who do your social media, marketing, and PR for you. This is our annual rebroadcast of a show with very smart ideas for you to think about over the holidays. It originally aired December 19th, 2014. On Tony's Take Two, my December webinar. We're sponsored by Turn Two Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. And by Dot Drives, prospect to donor, simplified. Tony.ma/dot for a free demo and a free month. Here is Zombie Loyalists. Peter Shankman is a well-known and often quoted social media, marketing, and public relations strategist. His latest book is Zombie Loyalists. He wants you to create rabid fans who do your social media, marketing, and PR for you. He's got super ideas and very valuable stories. I'm very glad Peter Shankman is with me in the studio. He's the founder of Haro, Help a Reporter Out, connecting journalists with sources. In under 2 years from starting it in his apartment, Haro was sending out 1,500 media queries a week to more than 200,000 sources worldwide. It was acquired by Vocus in 2010. He's the founder and CEO of The Geek Factory, a boutique social media, marketing, and PR strategy firm in New York City. Peter is on NASA's Civilian Advisory Council. You'll find him at Shankman.com, and he's at Peter Shankman on Twitter. His latest book is Zombie Loyalists, Using Great Service to Create Rabid Fans. I'm very glad his book brings him to Nonprofit Radio and the studio. Welcome, Peter.
Good to be here, Tony. Thanks.
It's a pleasure. You live on the west side of Manhattan.
I do.
And you, there's a pretty well-known 5-star steakhouse, I'll get Wolfgang's.
Yep.
Not far from you.
Nope.
But you pass it to go to a different steakhouse.
Correct.
Morton's.
Correct.
Why is that?
I am a zombie loyalist to Morton's. What does that mean? I love the service, the attention to detail, the quality, the sort of where everyone knows my name mentality. When I walk into that Morton's or any Morton's around the world, they have a tremendous customer relationship management system. When I call one number in New York or anywhere in the world, they know who I am by my cell phone, and I'm treated with just, you know, phenomenal happiness to hear from me, and my wishes are granted, as it were. We have a happy hour, a holiday party coming up at Morton's next couple of days, and you know, as always, I forgot to call and make a reservation, and you know, I called and yesterday and said, "Hey, I need any chance I get a reservation for 7 people, you know, Thursday night at 7 p.m., which is, you know, the week of the holiday party."
Yeah.
And they looked and they said, "Oh, well," and then I guess their computer system kicked in. "Of course, Mr. Shankman, not a problem at all. We'll get that for you right away. You know, we'll have a great booth for you, da da da. You know, and we'll tell us the names of the people attending. And you know they're gonna have specialized menus for them and with their names on them." So they have a really high level of service that they provide. Not just to me. That's the
right.
beauty of it. I mean, you know, it's one thing
for everybody.
Yeah, it's one thing if they just provide it to me, but they do that for everyone. And that is huge, because, you know, being able to call when a normal person makes a reservation, and not that I'm special, I'm actually rather abnormal, but when a normal person makes a reservation and says, you know, Morton says, "Okay, great, are you celebrating anything?" "Oh, yeah, it's my wife's birthday." "Oh, what's her name?"
That's routine.
They always ask to anyone who calls.
Yeah. Right.
Said, "Oh, you know, it's my wife's birthday." "Great, what's her name?" "Her name's Megan," or whatever. And you go in and they you sit down, and on the menu it says, "Happy birthday, Megan." And then Megan, whoever she happens to be, will spend the next 45 minutes, you know, taking 50 selfies with her menu. And
right.
That'll go online. And when her friends, you know, want that same experience, they're going to go to Morton's.
You say in the book, you get the customers you want by being beyond awesome to the customers you have.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to start with that Morton story, which is in the middle of the book. But they do it for everybody. And then they have the VIPs as well. And there's the terrific story of you tweeting. Go ahead, tell that story. That's a good story,
too. Well, it's a good story.
I love stories.
I was flying home from a day trip to Florida and was exhausted and starving. And
day trip, meaning you're flying down and
I flew down at 6 a.m. I had a lunch meeting, flew back the same day. You know, one of those days. And I jokingly sent the tweet, "Hey, Mortons, why don't you meet me at Newark Airport when I land with a porterhouse in 2 hours? Ha, 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 ha." You know, I said it the same way you'd say, "Hey, winter, please stop snowing," things like that.
Yeah.
And I landed, find my driver, and sitting next to my driver is a waiter in a tuxedo with a Morton's bag. They saw my tweet. They put it together. They managed to bring me a steak. And you know, as great of a story as it is, it's a great stunt, and it's a great story, and it wasn't staged, and it was completely amazing. But you know, that's not what they're about. They're not about delivering steaks to airports. They're about making a great meal for you and treating you like royalty when you come in. And, you know, if they just did that, if they just delivered the steak to the airport, but their quality and service sucked, you know, it wouldn't be a story. Because, oh, you know, look what they did for Peter, but, you know, my steak's cold.
So
what it really comes down to is the fact they do treat everyone like kings. And that's really, really important, because what winds up happening is you have a great experience at Morton's, and then you tell the world. You know, oh yeah, great dinner last night. That was amazing. I would totally eat there again. And as we move to this new world where, you know, review sites are going away, and I don't need to go to Yelp to read reviews from people I don't know.
Yeah, interesting.
You know, if they're shills or whatever the case may be, I don't know. Or TripAdvisor, same thing. I want people in my network who I trust, and people in their network who they trust, and then by default I trust. So, and that's going to be, that's already happening automatically. You know, when I land in LA and I type in steakhouse, you know, not me, I know where the steakhouses are in LA, but if someone types into Google Maps or Facebook steakhouse in Los Angeles, you know, they'll see all the steakhouses on a Google map, but if any of their friends have been to any of them, they'll see those first. And if they had a good experience, only if the sentiment was positive will they see those first. And that's pretty amazing. Because if you think about that, the simple act of tweeting out a photo, "Oh my God, thanks so much, Morton's, love this," that's positive sentiment. The network knows that. And so if you're looking for a steakhouse, you know, and your friend 6 months ago had that experience, "Oh my God, amazing steak, this is a great place," the sentiment's going to be there. And the network will know that, and the network will show you that steakhouse because you trust your friend.
And this is where we start to cultivate zombie loyalists.
Exactly.
Through this awesome customer service of the customers you have. Say more about zombie
loyalists. Yeah, I mean, you have so many companies out there who are trying to get the next greatest customer. You know, you see all the ads, you know, the Facebook posts, you know, "We're at 990 followers. Our 1,000th follower gets a free gift." Well, that's kind of saying screw you to the original 990 followers who you had who were there since the beginning. We don't care about you. We want that 1,000th. You know, that's not cool. The companies who see their numbers rise and who see their fans increase and their revenues go up are the ones who are nice to the customers they have. "Hey, you know, customer 852, it was really nice of you to join us a couple of months ago. How are you? We noticed that you posted on something about your car broke down. Well, you know, we're not in the car business, but you know, you're two blocks from our closest outlet or whatever, and you know, once if you need to come in, have a free cup of coffee, we'll let you use the phone, whatever." You know, those little things that you can do that really focus on the customers you have and make the customers you have the ones who are the zombies who tell other customers how great you are.
And this all applies to nonprofits certainly as well. I mean, the
no
book
question,
is,
but even more so.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know, nonprofits are constantly worried about how to make the most value out of their dollar and how to keep the dollar stretching further and further. And, you know, you have this massive audience who has come to you, who's a nonprofit and who said to you, "You know, we want to help. Here we are volunteering our help." And just simply treating them with the thanks that they deserve, not just a simple, "Hey, thanks for donating a car," but actually reaching out, asking what they want, asking how they like to get their information, things like that, will greatly increase your donations, as well as making them go out and tell everyone how awesome you are and letting them do your PR for you.
And that's what a zombie loyalist does. And this could be donors, could be volunteers to organization who aren't able to give a lot, but giving time is enormous.
Yep. And if they have such a great time doing it, they'll bring friends.
As zombies do.
You know, zombies have one purpose in life. Real zombies have one purpose in life. That's to feed. It doesn't matter how the Mets are doing. It doesn't matter, you know, because the chance that they lost anyway. But it doesn't matter how anyone's doing, you know, or what's going on in the world.
State
or
of the economy.
Like that. It doesn't matter. Right. What matters to a zombie is where are they going to get their next meal, because they feed. And they have to infect more people. Otherwise, they will die. Zombie loyalists are the same thing. All they have to do is make sure that their customer, they tell the world. And we all have that friend who does it. You know, that one friend who eats nothing but the Olive Garden because, oh my God, it's greatest breadsticks everywhere. You know, and they will drag your ass to the Olive Garden every single time they get that chance. That's a zombie loyalist.
and you want them to do that for your nonprofit. And there's big advantage to being a smaller organization. You could be so much more high touch. And we're going to talk about all that. We got the full hour with Peter Shankman. We got to go away for a couple minutes. Stay with us.
It's time for a break. Turn to communications. They have relationships with journalists. This is what you're looking for when you get a PR firm to do your public relations and your media for you. They've got the relationships because of the trust that they've built with reporters and editors at places like the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, CBS Market Watch, the Chronicle of Philanthropy. You get the first call when these outlets are looking for sourcing on charitable giving, on nonprofit trends, on philanthropy. They're calling Turn 2. Turn 2 refers to you because you're their client. You get first crack at first-class media. They're at turn-2.co. It's your life. No, you check them out. turn-2.co. Now, back to zombie loyalists.
Peter, it doesn't take much to stand out in the customer service world, does it?
It really doesn't. You know, and the reason for that is because we expect to be treated like crap.
Crap. Yeah, you know, if that's you think throughout about, the book. Yeah.
I love this example. Whenever I give speeches, I ask everyone in the audience, I'm like, who here has had a great flight recently? And like, at least one person will raise their hand. I'm like, okay, what made it great? And without fail, their answer is, well, we took off on time, and and I had the seat I was assigned, and we landed on time. And I'm like, so you paid for a service, they delivered that service, and you're over the freaking moon about it. Like, that's the state that we've become. You know, that's how bad customer service has been, that you are just beyond thrilled that they did exactly what they said they were going to do and nothing more.
Less than 20 minutes in the post office line.
Exactly.
And I'm ecstatic.
Exactly. You know, it's so we really are at a point where we only have to be one level above crap. I'm not even asking my clients to be good. Just one level above crap. You know, if everyone else is crap and you're one level above that, you're going to win. It's my favorite. One of my favorite jokes. the two guys are out in the woods. Hunting out in the woods, or just jogging out in the woods. The first one sees a bear, and they see this bear, and this bear's raised up, and he's about to strike. And the first one, you know, reaches down and tightens up his laces on his running shoes. And the second one says, "Dude, don't be an idiot. You can't outrun a bear." And he says, "I don't need to. I just need to outrun you." You know, I love that joke because it's so true. That's the concept. You know, all you have to do is be just a little bit better than everyone else, and you'll win the whole ball game.
Now we have to set some things up internally in order to have the structure in place. To create the zombie loyalists.
Yeah, I mean, you have a company where the majority of people in your company are afraid to do anything outside the norm. You know, yeah. I mean, look at a cell phone company. You know, you call them because you have a problem, right? AT&T or T-Mobile. You call them because you have a problem. They are actually the customer service people that handle your call are actually judged and rewarded based on how quickly they can get you off the phone. Mm. You know, not on whether or not they fix your problem,
how fast,
but how fast they can get you off the phone, which means how many more calls they can get. I remember I worked. When I worked at America Online, we all had to do a day of customer service every month just to see what it was like, which I thought was a brilliant idea. But, you know, again, it was a system called Vantiv where you'd sign on. And as soon as you signed on, if you weren't in a call, you know, that was tacked against you. And if you were in a call and it went over a certain amount of time, that was tacked against you. So The decks were stacked, not in the favor of the customer. There are some companies out there who allow their customer service employees to simply be smarter about what they do and do whatever it is they need to do to fix the problem. You know, my favorite story about this is Verizon Wireless. I went overseas. I was in Dubai. And I landed in Dubai and I turned on my phone. I had gotten global roaming on my phone, which, you know, $20 for every 100 megabytes. Okay. So I land and I turn on my phone and it says, like, before I'm even off the plane, I get a text that you've used $200 in roaming charges. I'm like, what the hell? You know, $300 by the time I get off the plane, I'm like, something's up here. So I call Verizon, and a nice guy answered the phone. And oh, yes. I mean, you know, the first thing he said was, yes, sir, you do have global roaming, but it doesn't work in Dubai. So I'm like, okay, well, that's not really global. That's more hemispherical roaming, I think, is the issue. And I said, well, look, I'm going to be here for a week. I said, you know, what, you have my credit card on file. Bill me like, I don't know, can you bill me like $1,000 and just let me have the phone for like the week and, you know, that, you know, or $500, I won't go over 2 gigs, but just do something for me. Sorry, sir, I'm not authorized to do that. You can, I'm like, so what do I have? He's like, well, you can pay $20.48 a megabyte. I'm like, I'm sorry, seriously? Which equates essentially to, I would be charged $20.48 for every, I think at the time, for every 4 seconds of the video Gangnam Style, if I would decide to watch it on my phone. Like, this is pretty ridiculous. So I simply hung up on Verizon. I went down the street to the Dubai, the Mall of the Emirates, which is the largest mall in the world. It has a freaking ski slope in it. And I'm not joking. It has a ski slope in this mall. And went to one of like the 86 different electronic stores in this mall. Bought an international unlocked version of the same exact cell phone I have. Went next door to the local SIM card store. Bought a SIM card that gave me 20 gigabytes of data and 1,000 minutes of talk for $40. I then put that in my phone. Because it's an Android phone, I simply typed in my username and password for Google, and everything imported. And Verizon did not get a penny on that trip. How easy would it have been for Verizon to say, okay, you know what, we'll cut your break. They'd still make a lot of money off me. And I would tell the world how great Verizon was to work with and how wonderful they did, how helpful they were. Instead, they guaranteed that I will never, that they will never make a penny for me on any international trip. And I take, what, 15 of them a year? Because now my cell phone, my international cell phone that I bought, all I do is pop out the SIM card. And when I land wherever I am, put in a new SIM card. So.
And you're speaking and writing and telling bad stories
of course,
about,
and, you know,
Verizon.
And every time I tell the story about Verizon, I make it a little worse. Apparently Verizon tests out the durability of their phone by throwing them at kittens. I read this on the internet. Must be true. But, you know, so not necessarily. But, you know, the concept that, all they had to do, was empower Mark.
Right.
That, you know,
guy
the customer
had no,
service.
Right, had
and
no,
it wasn't Mark's fault. Mark was a really nice guy. But he was not allowed to do that. He would have gotten fired if he tried to do a deal like that for me. And so it's this concept, you know. And the funny thing is it comes down to, if you really want to go down the road in terms of a public company like Verizon of where the issue is, you could even trace it to fiduciary responsibility. Because the fiduciary responsibility of any company, CEO, all the way down to the employee, is to make money for the shareholders. Okay, that's what fiduciary responsibility means. By not allowing me, by not allowing Mark, the customer service agent, to help me and take a different tack, he's actually losing money. Too many CEOs think about the next quarter. Oh, we have to make our numbers next quarter or I'm fired. Companies in other countries tend to think about the next quarter century. And they make a much bigger difference because they think, okay, what can we do now that will have impact in the next 5, 10, 15 years? You know, and really implement the revenue that we have and augment it. And companies in America don't tend to think about that, and that's a big problem.
I buy a product line that has a lot of natural and recycled materials. It's seventh generation. And their tagline is that in our every decision we must consider the impact on the next seven generations. It comes from an American Indian.
It's a great line. I mean, just think about how much money Verizon would have made for me in the past 3 years.
Yeah,
just in my overseas
travel. You'd be telling a story about like them about Morton's,
exactly.
Or like the one about
exactly.
Morton's.
For and, you know, look, a lot of people listen to me, and they went for a time when you Googled roaming charges Verizon when you Googled Verizon roaming charges my story about how I saved all this money.
Oh, really?
Came up first because I did the math, and if I had not called Mark and bought my own cell phone and done this, I would have come home to a $31,000 cell phone bill. And you know, damn well, Verizon wouldn't have done anything about that.
Yeah.
They'd have been like, oh, too bad, sorry. Should have read the fine print.
And plus, the employee who sold you the, quote, international plan.
Right.
I'm sure you told her, him
I did.
Or her,
she said, where are you going?
Dubai.
I said, I'm going to Canada and then I'm going to Dubai. I'm assuming she didn't know where Dubai was. She probably thought it was near Canada. But, yeah, right. Long story short, right. Couldn't use it.
All right, so employees have to be empowered. There has to be, we have to be, but changing a thinking too. I mean, the customer has to come first. The donor, the volunteer.
The donor, the volunteer. You get it. At the end of the day, where's your money coming from? I don't care if you're a nonprofit or a Fortune 100, where's your money coming from? You know, and if you, we see it happening over and over again. We're seeing it right now play out every single day with the company Uber. Uber, it's so funny because Uber makes, you know, they're valued at $40 billion right now, but that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything if people are running away in droves, which people are. There's a whole delete your Uber app movement.
Oh, people
whole,
are?
Oh, God, yeah. People are leaving.
Oh, what's their problem?
Well, it's several. Number one, that Uber is run by a bunch of guys who honor the bro code. The company was actually started by a guy who, in Business Insider, said he started the company to get laid. His goal was to always have a black car when he was leaving a restaurant to impress the girl he was with. He came out and said that. And you see that culture run rampant throughout Uber from their God mode where they can see – they actually created – there was a – I don't know where I read this. It might have been Business Insider as well. There was a – they created a hookup page that showed or a walk of shame page that showed where women were leaving certain apartments like on weekends and going – or leaving certain places on weekends going back to their home. It was obvious that they, you know, met some guy and got like, they did that. And then, of course, just their whole surge pricing mentality, which is, you know, 2 days ago, there was a couple of days ago, there was a terrorist attack in Sydney at that bakery. And Uber in Sydney instituted surge pricing for people trying to get out of harm's way. You know, and they later refunded it. Oh, it was a computer glitch. I'm sorry. You have a stop button, and you can, when you see something happening like that, there has to be someone in the office who can say, you know what? Not cool. We're going to take care of that, and hit the stop button. And it was, yeah, bad. Tons and tons and tons of bad publicity. Mm. And, you know, I was having an argument with someone on my Facebook page at facebook.com/Peter Shankman, because they said, oh, you know, so what? They don't turn on surge pricing. They don't have enough cabs there, and you know people can't get home. I said I'm pretty sure that the only company, I'm sure that no one had cab companies there. I'm sure that there wasn't anyone who had enough cars there, private cabs, Ubers, whatever. Yet the only stories I read about companies screwing up during that event were Uber, not Joe's Sydney cab company. You know, I didn't see him screwing up because he didn't turn on surge pricing. You gotta respect your customer. You have to.
As we're training for that, then not only trying to change that mindset, well, in trying to change that mindset, rewards for employees that do go the extra mile.
Yeah. Well, first of all, if you give the employees the ability to do it, to go the extra mile and understand they won't get fired, you're not going to get in trouble. I always tell every one of my employees, you're never going to get in trouble for spending a little extra money to try and keep a customer happy. You'll get fired for not doing it. You know, you'll get fired for not, for seeing an opportunity to fix someone and not taking it.
Not doing everything that you could.
You know, Ritz-Carlton is famous for that. Ritz-Carlton hires people, not because whether they can fold a bed sheet, but for how well they understand people. Because in Ritz-Carlton's mind, it's much more important to be a people person and be able to be empathetic. And that is such a key word. Empathy is just so sorely lacking. You know, how many of you have called customer service? Yeah, you know, I have to change my flight. My aunt just died. I really need to get home. Okay, great. That's $300. I just want to go an hour earlier. Mm. You know, you show up at the airport, your bag is overweight by half a pound. That's $75. Can you just cut me some slack? Nope. You know, so empathy and giving the employee the ability to understand that the customer, that sometimes you can make exceptions and it is okay to make changes.
And this is where a smaller organization has huge advantage.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easier to change.
That's what kills me. You know, I go to these, I try to frequent small businesses when I can. I go to some of these small businesses and they won't, they act like large businesses, you know, in the respect that they don't have a...
Like they want to be respected almost?
They don't have like a 6,000 page code that they have to adhere to. They can simply do something on the fly, and yet for whatever reason they won't do it. And it's the most frustrating thing, because I'm like, guys, you're acting like you're acting like Megalomart here, you know, and you're not Megalomart. And you're just Joe's House of Stationery, whatever it is. And, you know, not being able to help me, you're pretty much killing yourself, because you don't have 85 billion customers that have come through the door after me, you know, but I have a pretty big network. And for a small business to get killed socially, as social becomes more and more how we communicate, you know, it's just craziness.
It's we're pretty much in a world, I think, where something almost hasn't happened to you unless you share it.
I joke that, you know, if I can't take a selfie, was I really there? But it's true. You know, we do live in a world where, you know, I remember, God, 10 years ago, maybe not even 10 years ago, I was one of the first people to have a phone in my camera, you know, and it was like
camera in your phone.
That's what I said. Yeah. Camera in my phone. Right. And it was like I think it was like a 0.8 megapixel. Yeah, you know, it looked like I was taking a picture with a potato, but I remember it was 2002 and I was in Chase Bank and there was a woman arguing with the teller. And I pulled out my video. You know, it was the crappiest video you ever seen. Yeah. But I pulled it out, and I said, you know, I started recording, and the woman behind the counter was talking to the customer, saying, "You do not speak to me that way. You get out of this bank right now." And the customer was saying, "I just wanted my balance," and the manager comes over, and I get this whole thing on my little crappy 3G Motorola phone. And I remember I posted online, and Gawker picks it up. I emailed it, the headline I put on my blog was, you know, Chase, where the right relationship is at, go F yourself, you know, and it just got tons of play. And then Gawker picked it up. It went everywhere, totally viral. So it's one of those things that you're just like, you know, this was in 2002. It's 12 years later. How the hell can you assume that nothing is being, that you're not being recorded? You know, I remember I sneezed a couple of weeks ago not to get too graphic here, but it was I needed a tissue big time after I was done sneezing. And I remember going through my pockets looking for desperately looking for tissue and like looking around making sure I wasn't on camera somewhere, that someone didn't grab that and it was going to be the next viral sensation, you know? I mean, I went to high school with 8 blocks from here, right? If the amount of cameras that are in Lincoln Center today were there in 1989, 1990, I'd be having this conversation behind bulletproof
prison
glass
cell,
or, and you'd be, so you know, you'd be talking to me, you'd have to get special clearance to visit me, probably be at the Supermax in Colorado or something. So you know, it's one of those things that you're just like, my kid who's almost 2 years old now is going to grow up with absolutely no expectation of privacy, the same way that we grew up with an expectation of privacy. And I'm thankful for that, because she will make a lot less stupid moves. You know, I mean, god, the things that I thought, you know, in high school, I thought the stupidest thing in the world. Thank God there wasn't a way for me to broadcast that to the world in real time. Jeez. Thank God.
Creating these zombie loyalists, we've got to change culture and thinking and reward systems. Let's go back to the cost of all this. Mm-hmm. Why is this a better investment than trying to just focus on new donors?
I love this analogy, and I'll give you a fun analogy. Let's say I'm at a bar, and there's a very cute girl across the bar, and she catches my eye. I catch her. I go up to her. I go, you know, you don't know me, but I'm amazing in bed. You should finish your drink right now. Come home. Let's get it on. I'm going to impress her. I'm that good. Chances are she's going to throw her drink in my face. Go back talking to her friends. I've done a lot of research on this. That's probably exactly what she's going to do. Now, let's assume an alternate world. I'm sitting there on my phone. I'm just playing like, you know, some, you know, Words with Friends or something like that. And she's over there talking to her friends. And one of her friends looks up and says, holy crap, that's Peter. I think that's Peter Shankman. I've heard him speak. He's in this fantasy world. I'm single, too. He's single, and he's having this amazing guy. I know he has a cat. You have a cat. You should totally go talk to him. At the very least, I'm getting this girl's number. That's PR. Okay? And what do we trust more? Me with my, you know, fancy suit collar going over my 70s leisure suit. Hi, I'm amazing. Or the girl saying, hey, we've been friends since third grade. I'm recommending that guy. You should trust me on this. You know, obviously that's where good customer service comes into play. And that's where corporate culture comes into play. Because if I have a great experience with you and at your company, I'm going to tell my friend when they're looking, and I will stake my personal reputation on it. And there's nothing stronger than that.
And these are the people we want to breed as zombie loyalists.
It's stronger than advertising, stronger than marketing.
And they're going to share. People want to share.
Think about the internet runs on two things. It runs on drama and bragging, or bragging and drama. And if you need any proof of that, you know, go and look at all the hashtags with crap that's happened, you know, bad customer service, bad whatever. But then look at all the good hashtags. You know, when our flight's delayed for 3 hours and we lose our seat, oh my God, I hate this airline, blah, 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 worst airline ever. But when we get upgraded, right? Hashtag first class bitches, or whatever it is, you know, something stupid like that. And the whole, because we love to share. It's only a great experience if we could tell the world, and it's only a bad experience if we can make everyone else miserable about it as well.
It's time for Tony's Take Two. I am hosting a new free webinar, Planned Giving, 5-Minute Marketing, hosting my own. As I said last week, this feels very good. No shackles. No, not being shackled and drawn by those others who host. No, I'm grateful to the others who host me. And we'll be hosting in 2021. Lots more webinars coming up. I'm grateful to them. But I'm doing my own, too. So no more shackled and drawn. We're doing this in this month, December. It's on Thursday, December 17th, 3 p.m. Eastern. It's a quick shot, another one, 45 minutes only, on planned giving marketing. How to promote the idea of planned gifts to your prospects. Who are the best prospects to be promoting to? What's the message you should be sending to them? And how do you get it out multi-channel? I'm going to do this all in 45 minutes. Plus, time for questions, which is my favorite. I have fun with the questions. It tells me where you're focused. I like the questions. So we're doing all this Thursday, December 17th. You register at plannedgivingaccelerator.com/webinar. That is Tony's Take Two. The last Take Two of 2020, as a matter of fact, come to think of it. Now, back to our annual rebroadcast of Zombie Loyalists.
Peter, you have a golden rule of social media that a good number of customers like to share, and people are going to keep doing it.
People will always share. Again, it goes back to the concept that if you create great stuff, people want to share it because people like to be associated with good things. If you create bad stuff, and by stuff I mean anything from like a bad experience to bad content, people not only won't share that, but will go out of their way to tell people how terrible you are.
Yeah.
You know, how many times have you seen companies fail horribly? You know, after major disasters, when companies are tweeting, you know, completely unrelated things. After a random school shooting. No, it was after the shooting at the theater in Aurora, Colorado, at the Dark Knight. The NRA tweets, "Hey, shooters, what's your plans for this weekend?" You know, and I'm just sitting there going, "Really?" You know, but and of course the thing was retweeted millions of times. You know, with sort of shame on the NRA. So we're a society, like I said earlier, that loves to share when great things happen to us, but loves to tell the world when we're miserable, because we're only truly miserable when we make everyone else miserable around us. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the generosity series. One of my favorite stories, which goes to sort of a bigger picture of culture, and somehow when you're just doing your job, because that's what you're supposed to do your job, but you don't realize there are ways to get around that. I listen to your podcast, among others, when I'm running through Central Park. And more like, if you know my body type, more like lumbering through Central Park. But I get there. I'm an Iron Man. I have that. And so I go through Central Park, and it's super early in the morning because I usually have meetings and I don't run fast. I really don't run fast. But as I'm running...
But let's give you the credit to it. You have done a bunch of Ironmans.
I have.
Marathons.
So I do.
Well.
I do it. You know, my mother tells me that I just have very poor judgment in terms of what sports I should do. But on the flip side, I'm also a skydiver, which is with my weight is awesome. Yeah. I fall better than anyone. You know? So I'm running through Central Park last year. It was February of 13. And of 14, it was this year, and it was probably around 4:45 in the morning because I had an 8 a.m. meeting and had to do 10 miles. So 4:45 in the morning, I'm running up at around 79th, 80th Street on the east side in the park, and a cop pulls me over, and I says, "What are you doing?" And I look at him. I'm wearing black spandex. I have a hat. It's 5 degrees out. I'm like, what? Playing checkers? You know what? You know, I'm like, I'm running. And he's like, "Okay, can you stop running?" I'm like, "Okay." He's like, "You know, the park's closed." I'm like, "No, it's not." Like, I'm in it. Look around. There are other people. He's like, "Nope, park doesn't open until 6 a.m. I'm like, he's like, "Do you have any ID on you?" I'm like, "No, I'm running." He goes, "What's your name?" I'm like, "Seriously?" He's like, "I'm writing you a summons." I'm like, "You're writing me a summons for exercising. I just want to clarify this. You're writing me a..." And sure enough, the guy wrote me a summons for exercising in Central Park before it opened. The charge was violating curfew. You know, I'm like, I get the concept of the curfew. It's to keep people out after 2 a.m. It's not to prevent them from going in early to exercise to be healthy. I'm like, I'm not carrying, you know, a six pack. I'm not drinking a big gulp. I'm not smoking. I'm doing something healthy, and you're writing me a summons for it. And I said, you know, I'm gonna have a field day with this. I said, I kind of have some followers. This is gonna be a lot of fun. I'm not, you know, I know you're just doing your job, sir, even though you have the discretion not to, but okay. So I go back home. I take a picture of my ticket. I email it to a friend of mine on the New York Post. You know, front page New York Post next day. No running from this ticket. You know,
front page.
Of course.
That's great.
New York Times covered it. Runner's World covered it. I mean, I went everywhere. Gawker covered it. You know, and my whole thing was just like, dude, you have discretion. Look at me. You know, I'm not even going super fast. For God's sake, I'm just trying to exercise here. You know, and of course I went to court and I beat it. But how much money did it cost the city for me to go to court, fight this thing? You know, every employee, you have to give your employees the power of discretion, the power of empathy to make their own decisions. If you go by the book, bad things will happen.
And again, small shops, so much easier to do.
Yep.
Flat organizations.
I work with a nonprofit, animal rescue nonprofit. A friend of mine was a skydiver, and
you shout him out. What's
no? I can't. There's a reason I can't. Okay. But there's a friend of mine was a skydiver, and she was killed in a base jump several years ago. And her husband asked to donate in her memory to this nonprofit. So I sent him a check. And about 3 months later, I get a coffee table book in the mail. And I was living by myself at the time. I didn't own a coffee table. It was, you know, more money to spend on my flat screen. And I remember. I look at this coffee table book. I throw it in the corner. And I look at it over the next couple of days. And it pisses me off at how much of my donation did it cost to print, mail, and produce this book to me. And so I call them up. "Well, sir, we believe most of our donors are older and probably prefer to get a print version as opposed to like digital. You know, where they'd throw it away." And I'm like, "You don't throw digital away, but okay." I'm like, so you've done surveys and you've asked all your... "No, we just assume that most of them are older." I'm like, "Okay." So I opened my mouth, wound up joining their board, and spent the next year interviewing. Customers interviewing every current and past donor about how they like to get their information, and shock of shocks, 94% said online. And so over the following year, we launched a Facebook page, Twitter page, Flickr account, YouTube, everything. P.S. The following year after that, donations went up 37% in 1 year. In that economy, it was right around 08, 09. Donations went up 37% in 1 year. And they saved over $500,000 on printing, mailing, and reproduction. Mm. Imagine going to your boss. Hey, boss, revenue's up 37% and we saved $500,000. Your boss is going to buy you a really good beer. You know, all they had to do was listen to their audience. Be relevant to the audience you have. And they will tell you what they want.
We have tons of tools for segmentation.
Oh, my God.
But you got to listen to what segment you want people want to be in.
You know, someone asked me the other day, you know, what's the best, I knew nothing about their company, but what's the best social media outlet for me to be on? Should I be on Twitter? Should I be on Facebook? I said, I'll answer that question if you can answer this question I'm going to ask you. Is my favorite type of cheese Gouda or the number six? They said, I don't understand. That's not a real question. I'm like, neither is yours. Like, I can't tell you where the best place to be. Your audience can. I said, go ask your audience. Believe me, they will tell you. There's a gas station in the Midwest. Come and go. I just love the name. K-U-M-N-G-O.
Right.
Come and go.
Yes.
And their tagline is...
They're in the book. You can read more about them in the book.
Their tagline is always something extra. I mean, come on. The jokes just write themselves, for God's sake. But
and they don't take themselves too seriously.
They really
I love
don't.
That.
Just such the, a come and go.
Just knowing the name of the company.
Great
yes.
gas station.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember they're in Iowa, and I went out to visit a friend in Iowa, and I'm just like, you got to get a photo of me in front of the come and go sign, you know. And the beauty of this is that some of their employees actually look at their customers when they're on their phones in the stores and go, oh, you know, what do you use Twitter more or Facebook? And they say, oh, I use it. And they record that information, and they know it.
Yeah.
God, customers will give you so much info if you just ask them, because then they feel invested. They feel invested in your company. They feel like that you took the time to listen to their nonprofit requests or their questions, and they feel like they're. I did it for Harrow. Every month we'd have a one question Harrow survey. You know, Harrow one question survey, and it was we'd get like 1,000 people to respond, and I'd spend the entire weekend emailing everyone who responded, thanking them personally. Mm-hmm. It took my entire weekend, but it was great because what would wind up happening is that, you know, if we took their advice and launched it on Monday with the new thing, they'd go, oh my God, Harrow did this for me. They took my advice. Well, yeah, it was your advice and 800 other people's advice, but we took it. And they'd be like, oh my God, this is a great thing. And it just made them so much more loyal, and they'd tell hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. There were days. I remember I was in Temple one morning, the Garmin Center Synagogue, and my phone, I feel my phone getting really hot in my pocket, which is not normal. And I'm like starting to hurt, and I look at it, it's almost on fire. It had frozen. Because we were mentioned in Seth Godin's morning blog. At that time, I was getting emails every time we get a new subscriber. And the phone had actually frozen and was locked and was, like, overheating. I had to take out the battery and, like, reset the entire phone because we just got so many new – we got, like, 14,000 subscribers in, like, 3 hours. It's obscene.
You say excuse me. You say that customer service is the new advertising, marketing, and PR.
Yeah, it really is. Well, again, you know, if we're moving into that world where – so imagine a lava lamp, and I love that I can use this analogy. Imagine a lava lamp. A lava lamp has water, oil, and a heat source, right? The heat source heats the oil flows through the water, it makes pretty colors. I've heard it looks really good when you're high. Now, I've heard. Now, imagine if, ooh, crystals. Imagine if you're, everyone you meet in your network, okay, is a drop of oil. The water is your network. The water is your world. Everyone you meet in your network, from the guy you're sitting doing the radio interview with to the guy who serves you ice cream at the local deli, to the guy who does your dry cleaning, to your girlfriend, to your wife, to not at the same time, to your kid's second grade teacher, to your second grade teacher years ago. Everyone you meet is in your network. You know, right now, when Facebook first started, I would see the same weight from a kid I went to junior high school with. His post would have the same weight as, like, my current girlfriend, which is ridiculous. I don't need to know about everything my friend from junior high school is doing. I haven't talked to the kid in 15 years. Facebook's gotten a lot smarter, as has Google. Now, I see the people I communicate with the most, okay? And if I reach out and communicate with new people, they start rising in my feet, in my stream. If I don't, they fall. It's just like a lava lamp. Every person you connect with is a drop of oil. That heat source at the bottom that's raising or lowering those drops of oil is relevance. So if you imagine the heat source is relevance, and the more I interact with someone, the higher they go in my network and the more I see of them, the more trust level there is. When I'm at a bar and I meet someone, or at a restaurant or a conference, I meet someone, I don't need to connect them. I don't need to go on Facebook and friend request them. You know how awkward friend requesting is when you stop and think about it? Last time we friend requested someone in the real world was second grade. Will you be my friend? My daughter's doing that now. She goes up to, like, the cat. Will you be my friend? I'm like, honey, the cat doesn't want to be your friend. But, you know, it's this awkward thing. Who the hell friend requests someone anymore? If I'm hanging out with you at a bar and we connect again and we talk and we go out to dinner and we're having a good time, we're friends. I don't need to first request that you know, so that's going away. Friending, following, liking, and fanning is all going away. What will interact is the actual connection. So if I meet with you, and I have a good time with you, and we talk again, if I use your business, if I go to your nonprofit, if I donate, if I volunteer, whatever, the network knows that. The more I do that, the more I interact with you, the more you have the right to market to me. And the more you will be at the top of my stream, and the more I will see information about you, the less I will have to search for you. But if you do something stupid, or we're no longer friends, see ya. You're going to fade. I don't have to unfriend you. You just disappear. Unfriending is also awkward. I dated a woman. We broke up, but it was 9 months after we broke up. Neither of us wanted to unfriend the other one because it was just awkward. Until I woke up, she was a friend of me. Anyway, but, you know, the concept of not having to do that, of just, you know, okay, I haven't talked to you in a while. I don't see your posts anymore. That's the real world. That's how it should be.
And if you're not feeding zombie loyalists,
yeah,
they can start to defect.
And no question about it.
So I want to spend a little time on...
If you're not reaching out to your customers, talking to them, giving them what they want, talking about their information, helping them out, they will gladly go somewhere else to someone who is. You know, if I have a great experience with a restaurant every week for 3 years, and then all of a sudden, over time, I'm noticing less and less, that restaurant's doing less and less to take care of me, you know, and maybe management's changed, and I don't feel that, you know, I'm ripe for being infected by another company. I'm ripe for someone else to come and say, you know, Peter... Because if I tweet something like, wow, can't believe I have to wait 40 minutes for a table. This didn't used to be like that. If someone else is a smart restaurant, they're following me and they're going to great. You know, Peter, there's no wait over here. Why don't you come 2 blocks north and we'll give you a free drink? You know, ooh. You know, and that right there, that's first sign of infection. And I might become infected by another company, become a zombie loyalist for them.
And so let's take, you have a lot of good examples. Let's take a one-on-one situation. How can we start to cure that?
The simple act of realizing... Following your customers, understanding when they're not happy, and fixing the situation before it escalates. You know, you can contain a small outbreak, small viral outbreak. You can contain that by getting the right people, finding out what the problem is, getting them into one room, fixing their problem, healing them.
You have a good United story right back when it was Continental.
I was a frequent flyer and booked a trip to Paris, and was very angry because they charged me like $400 in booking fees or something like that. I don't remember what it was. And I called the CEO. I just for the hell of it. I'm like, I wrote an email.
This was before social.
Right. I wrote an email to the CEO. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. I'm a frequent flyer. And like 30 minutes later, my phone rings. I'm like, hello? Peter Shagman, yeah. Please hold for Larry Kellner, CEO of Continental Airlines. I'm like, ooh, crap. You know? And the guy gets on the phone. He's like, Peter, how you doing? Mr. Shagman, how you doing? Sorry, Clinton. These fees, they're new. We sent out a note. I'm guessing you didn't see it. We're going to waive them for you. But if you have any more problems, you know, feel free to call me. And I hung up the phone for the next 40 minutes just sort of staring at it. Like, holy crap, Larry Kellner, the CEO of United Airlines, just called me and talked to me. And I mean, it was like God coming down and say, you now have the power to levitate your cat. It was just ridiculous. And so, you know, I have been faithful to Continental and now United ever since. And they continue to treat me with respect and do great things. And they're improving. They were getting a lot of crap over the past several years. And they really are starting to improve. It's nice to see.
And not only, of course, your own loyalty, but you're a zombie loyalist for them. And how many times, how much, it's unquantifiable.
Yeah, it's unquantifiable. I've dragged so many friends to United. I've made so many friends. I mean, my father, you know, he only flies United now, which means he drags my mom only on United. I only drag my wife on United. There's a lot of work that way, yeah.
Well, we got to go away for a couple of minutes. When we come back, of course, Peter and I are going to keep talking about his book. Comes out in January, Zombie Loyalists.
Time for our last break. Dot drives. Dot drives engagement. Dot drives relationships. Dot drives is the simplest donor pipeline fundraising tool. They've made it customizable, collaborative, and intuitive. It moves the needle on your prospect and donor relationships. If that's what you want, if you want to move prospects along from prospect, potential donor to donor, and then beyond, of course, stewardship, this is what Dot does for you. For listeners, as you know, there's a free month and a free demo. You go to the listener landing page at tony.ma/dot. We've got buttloads more time. That's the last buttloads of 2020. That's something. But there'll be plenty of butts in 2021. Buttloads more time for Zombie Loyalists with Peter Shankman.
You have some examples of zombie loyalist leaving en masse, like Domino's, Netflix. They're both in the book. Yeah. So so one leaving, if you're not starting to cure one leaving,
yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, the beauty,
it'll expand.
The beauty of the internet with the hashtags and everything like that. You know, it doesn't take a long time for those things to sort of blow up in your face. And you know, at the end of the day, everyone's like, oh, you know, Twitter's responsible for us losing a million. No, they're not. you're responsible for you losing millions.
Yeah.
You know, and, and if your product isn't great and your actions don't speak well of who you are, then there's no reason your customers should stay with you. You know, and everyone's like, oh, social media is really hurting us. No, you're hurting yourself. The only difference is that social media makes it easier for the world to know about.
Yeah, they're just telling the story.
Yep.
Yeah. Domino's and Netflix are good examples because they
bounced back.
They took responsibility. Yep. And yeah,
they both owned it. Domino's came out and said, you know what? You're right. Our pizza, we do have a problem. We're going to fix this. And they spent millions fixing it. And sure enough, they're back with a vengeance now. I may or may not even have ordered them every once in a while. And I live in New York City. That's a sacrilege.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I have the app on my phone for when I'm over, you know, traveling somewhere. I'll be in Sheboygan, whatever. And you know, what are you going to get at 11:30 at night when your flight's delayed and you land? It's, you know, Domino's. which reminds me, I should probably go exercise. On the flip side, you know, look at something like Netflix. They also were screwing up. You know, yeah. They were losing. They tried to switch between the two. They came up with a new name, and everyone's
so
just like,
gross
this is
and
just,
public. Oh man!
You know, and so, and again, you're watching the same thing happen with Uber right now. So it's gonna be really interesting to see if they're able to repair themselves.
Listening is important. Both those two examples, they listen to their customers.
I think there's a problem with listening because everyone's been saying listen for months and years and years and years now, but you know, no one ever says that you have to do more than just listen. You have to listen and actually follow up.
Yeah.
It's one thing to listen. You know, I use the example of my wife. I could sit there and listen to her for hours, you know, but if I don't actually say anything back, she's going to smack me, you know, and go into the other room. And so you really have to, it's a two-way street. You know, listening is great, but you got to respond. And look, I'll take it a step further. Everyone's like, oh, Twitter's so great because someone was complaining on Twitter and we went online and we saw the complaint and then we fixed their problem and yay. Isn't this? How about if the problem didn't exist in the first place? You know, because the great thing about Twitter is that, yeah, people can complain on Twitter. The bad thing about it is they're complaining about you on Twitter. So it's like, what if the problem didn't exist in the first place? What if you empowered your front desk clerk to fix the problem so that I didn't have to tweet? Hertz is my favorite story of all this. I used to rent from Hertz religiously. And then I went to Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport this past April. And I gave a, I was giving a speech, and I go, and I, my name's supposed to be on the board, you know, so I can go right to my car. And it wasn't. I said, okay, that happens. I go downstairs. I wait 40 minutes on the VIP line. After 40 minutes, they finally say, you know, there's a only one guy here. A lot of people might have a better chance if you go up to the regular line. I'm like, okay, probably could have told us that a little earlier. Go up to the regular line, spend 45 minutes waiting in the regular line. It's now been...
Now, are you tweeting while this is happening?
Well, I had enough. I was actually not only tweeting, I had enough time to create a meme. That should give you some idea of how long I was online with my cell phone. I was great enough to have a meme.
Yes.
I get up to the counter. Hi, can I help you? Yeah, I was downstairs at the VIP desk, and they told me, you have VIP reservation? You have to go downstairs. Like, yeah, okay, let's put a pin in that. They just sent me up here. Like, right, they have to help you. Well, it's not really they. You guys are the same company. I mean, I can see the reservation on the screen. You can help me. Sorry, sir, I can't help you. You have to go to the VIP next. Like, you just nexted me. Okay. So, if you know anything about Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix, all of the rental car companies
They're all in the same place.
So, I walked 50 feet.
It's a bus takes you to the big pavilion where they're all next to each other.
I walked 50 feet from the cesspool of filth and depravity that was Hertz to the wonderful Zen Garden of Tranquility that was Avis. And in 4 minutes, I had a nicer, cheaper, more or nicer, less expensive car given to me by a woman named Phyllis, who was 66 and moved to Phoenix from Detroit with her husband for his asthma. I knew this because she told me.
Yeah.
She smiled at me. She brought her manager out and said, it's another refugee from Hertz. And I said, so this happens a lot. They're like, yep. I'm like, wow, you'd think they'd have done something about that. And so on the way out in Avis, I thank them. I walk past hers. I shoot them this, you know, sort of look of the beast. I get my Avis car and I drive to my hotel. Once I get to my hotel, I write a wonderful blog post about my experience called Peter and Hertz and the Terrible, Horrible, No Boot, Good, Really Bad Customer Experience. Once you have a kid, you find out you're writing titles about your blog post that have to do with kids' books. I do not like Hertz, Sam I Am, you know, things like that. And I included in this blog post the five things I'd rather do than ever rent from Hertz again. I think number three was ride a razor blade bus through a lemon juice waterfall. with just...
cool.
You know, and so, but of course, the next day, Hertz reaches out to me. Oh, Mr. Jangman, this is the head of North American customer service. I saw your blog. I'm like, they're like, you know, we'd love to have... Nick, no. Like, you're not going to fix the problem, number one, because I'm in an Avis car. I'm never going back to Hertz. Number two, there were five people yesterday. Five people I interacted with, all of whom had the chance to save me and keep me as a customer for life. A customer who had been so happy and I would have loved you, five people blew it. So don't waste your time trying to convert me back. You're not going to. What you want to do is spend some of that energy retraining your staff to have empathy and to give them the ability and the empowerment to fix my problem when it happens. Because five people, it takes every single employee to keep your company running. It takes one to kill it.
Yeah.
P.S. Avis reached out to thank me personally. And I am now just this ridiculously huge loyal fan of Avis and always will be.
You have a pretty touching story about when you worked at a yogurt shop. You were really young. We have a couple minutes. Tell that good story.
See, that was on the East Side, which again is yet another reason why I live on the West Side. Nothing good ever happens in Manhattan's East Side. So I was working at I Can't Believe It's Yogurt, which was a store that I think back in the 80s.
ICBY.
TCBY was the country's best yogurt.
Oh, the country's. Oh.
ICBIY was a poor attempt.
Oh, I Can't Believe It's Yogurt.
I Can't Believe It's Not Yogurt. I Can't Believe It's Yogurt. It was a poor attempt to capitalize on
that. That was TCBY.
And right, I'm working right. at this store, and I go in every day and make the yogurt and clean the floors. I do, you know, typical high school job. And it was during the summer, and thousands of people walking by. I think it was like 2nd Avenue or something. And there were these brass poles that hung from, you know, there was an awning, right? It's an awning up there, and there were the brass poles that held the awning up. And they were dirty as hell, right? I'm sure they'd never been polished ever. And I found some brass polish in the back, like all the way buried in the back. And one afternoon, I went outside. And I started polishing the poles. My logic was, if the poles were shiny and people saw them, maybe they'd come into the store. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'd want to, you know, buy more.
Nice clean place.
And the manager came out. What the hell are you doing? I said, I told him what I thought. I don't pay you to think. Get inside. You know, I'm like, there's no customers in there. I'm like, okay, I'll make sure the yogurt's still pumping at full blast. And I quit. I just quit that job. Like, I mean, like, I couldn't even begin to understand why someone would invest. I mean, to own a franchise, probably $50,000. At least to buy that franchise, why wouldn't he invest in the 2 seconds it took a little elbow grease to make the poles clean that might bring in more customers? What the hell?
And, you know? But you're not paid to think.
You're not paid to think. My favorite line, yeah. I encourage, if any kids are listening to this, teenagers, if your boss says that to you, quit. Quit. I will hire you. Just quit. It's probably the worst thing in the world that you could possibly do, because you have customers who every day can be helped by people who are paid to think, and that's the ones you want to hire.
We got to wrap up. Tell me what you love about the work you do.
I get paid to talk. I mean, my God, this is the same stuff I used to get in trouble for in high school. But on a bigger picture, what I really love about it is being able to open someone's eyes and have them come back to me. I run a series of masterminds called Shank Minds Business Masterminds at shankminds.com. They're day-long seminars all around the country. And I had someone come to me and say, you know, I took your advice about XYZ, and I started listening a little more, and I just got the largest retainer client I've ever had in my life by a factor of 4. She goes, and I just can't even thank you enough. She sent me like a gorgeous bottle of tequila. She's like, I can't even thank you enough. Oh my God. Being able to help people, you know, at the end of the day, I've yet to find another planet suitable for life. I'm looking. So we're all in this together. And if that's the case, you know, why wouldn't we want to help people just a little bit more? You know, there really isn't a need to be as douchey as we are as a society. We could probably all be a little nicer to each other, and you'd be surprised how that'll help.
The book is Zombie Loyalists. It's published by Palgrave Macmillan. Comes out in January. You'll find Peter at shankman.com and on Twitter at Peter Shankman. Peter, thank you so much.
Pleasure was mine.
Oh, thank you.
Next week, as I alluded to, there is no show next week or for the week after. I hope you enjoy the hell out of your holidays. Although I know Hanukkah's already passed. I'm sorry. That's sort of a set thing that I don't have a lot of control over. If I did, I would do something about it. But there's not a lot I can do about that. But you still have New Year's. You got that to look forward to. And I hope everyone enjoys time off. Time with family in small, of course, small household size groups. Let's keep it safe. There'll be a 2021. And take time for yourself. Yourself. You need it. You deserve time for yourself. Rest, recovery, recuperation, naps. Highly underrated naps. It's terrible. I did a whole blog post years ago on naps. I admire naps. Oh, I more than admire. I thrive over naps. I exult in naps. Yes. Way beyond mere admiration of naps. I exult in naps. It's been a rough year. So however you take care of yourself, you know what's best for yourself. Do it. Do it, please. Take good care of yourself. And I will see you in 2021. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it at TonyMartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. And by Dot Drives, prospect to donor simplified. Tony.ma/dot for a free demo and that free month. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this music is by Scott Stein. Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with me next week. No, not next week. Be with me next year for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out there and be great.